Mystery Crate has been presented by ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Welcome to another episode of the Mystery Crate. As you know, on this show, we like to do a lot of different things week to week. And this week is certainly no exception. This is something we sort of tested on South Beach Sessions. We did a South Beach Sessions with former Marlins team president David Sampson and filmmaker Billy Corbin. Billy Corbin, you may know from Cocaine Cowboys, The U, Parts 1 and 2, or Screwball, his latest documentary feature, which is now available on DVD, where you can get it on iTunes. Special shout out to Billy Corbin for taking time out of his busy schedule to do what we're about to play. Which
Man,
is-
I was really excited. I thought we were going to try to find another way to repurpose our Gramercy show.
No. Well, you weren't satisfied with just the two?
No, like I thought maybe we could do like a puppet show version of it or something. You know, just find another way.
For a podcast?
Yeah, just find some other way to repurpose, because I don't think we've done it enough.
You don't think so?
No.
A puppet podcast.
You got me up feeling all self-conscious because like we only repurposed it twice.
Well, we did it.
We did it. We had the experience, so that's one,
right.
I guess. But that's not really a repurposing. Right. That's just a purposing.
We talked about it.
We talked about it on the air, so that's repurposing for sure. Where were we?
Anyway.
Billy Corbin, David Sampson, they did a South Beach Sessions together, and everyone in our audience could tell that David Sampson and Billy Corbin hated each other on that South Beach session. So naturally, the thought was, hey, let's get them back in the studio together and remove Dan from it so it's just them two and see what comes of it. And we did this not too long ago where David Sampson and Billy Corbin, the filmmaker, joined us, the shipping container in the studio, and we just turned on mics and we went for it. And hopefully you enjoy the results. And if you do, please subscribe, rate, review, circulate this on your social media platforms, because if you want to hear more of it, I need to see the metrics to see if this is, you know, worth doing again. We use Mystery Crate as a bit of a beta test here on the Levitard and Friends Network. Speaking of that fine network, Chris Cody, who is the network sponsor?
Oh, guys, it is time for me to talk about Tissot. You see what I did there?
Yeah.
I don't get it.
Because timepieces.
Yeah. Tissot is the official watch of the NBA. You think to yourself, maybe the NBA has a bunch of watch. No, it's just Tissot. Each one of Tissot's timepieces delivers quality performance and traditional luxury. This graduation season, man, is it graduation season already?
Yeah, it's been.
Man, this graduation season, get the NBA fan in your life, and they don't even have to be an NBA fan. Just because Tissot's the official watch of the NBA doesn't mean you got to get this watch for only NBA fans, but
they have to be in your life.
Right. Actually, you could just buy one and give it to anybody. So technically, you can buy a Tissot watch and give it to anybody.
Even the Tissot Chrono XL, the NBA edition that's made with real Spalding game ball leather, even if I didn't like the sport of basketball, that's still one hell of a timepiece that combines performance and luxury.
You are so right, Mike. The Tissot Chrono XL, it is the watch that gives you the sporty chronograph with the Swiss technology at an unbeatable price. So shop now at us.tissotshop.com. That is us.tissotshop.com.
Here it is for you guys and gals. Billy Corbin, the documentarian, and David Sampson, the former Marlins team president that built the South Florida community out of millions. I'm just kidding. He refutes it at every turn. But you'll notice Billy Corbin likes to bring that up a lot. Here it is. They have more things in common than you might think, even though they're on opposite ends of the stadium debate, obviously. But they have more things in common than you might know. They're both short. They both live in Miami. They're both Jewish. They both like movies, and they both hate each other. They detest each other. So here it is. Billy Corbin and David Sampson.
So this is David Sampson, and I was walking down the street, and you would not believe who I ran into. This is a guy who I did not ever want to meet. I ended up being introduced to him by Levitard. We became unfriends on Twitter and via text, and I'm walking down on a non-sunny day looking for people looking sunny, and there he was. I said, get in here. We got to have a talk.
You weren't walking anywhere. You were creeping around the pool at the Clevelander looking at co-eds is what you were doing.
Well, I appreciate that, except I don't creep. I am small like you are, but I do not creep. I make it very obvious when I'm going after someone or something.
I'm pretty sure you're supposed to be at least 500 feet away from the Clevelander pool. Isn't there some sort of judge's order?
It's actually quite the opposite. I actually went to court recently to make sure that I could be within 500 yards of people at the Clevelander. Yeah. So I got to tell you, I worked with, you know, Mike Hill, the guy who is purportedly ruining all the trades for the Marlins. And he had this great expression that because he worked with me for a long time, and I'm Jewish, and Jeffrey was Jewish, and Larry Beinfest was Jewish before he was fired. Well, he's still Jewish. He's just fired.
Right.
So he would
say, all of you giving us a bad name.
He is Jewish, but from the waist up. And I would tell you that I am Jewish from head to toe.
I'm only Jewish from the waist down. So that's the difference, I think.
So can you imagine how fortuitous it would be to run into Billy Corbin and then find ourselves two microphones? Because I've got some issues with you that we need to discuss. And I'm going to get to Screwball. I want to talk about all the movies that we both love. It's the only common ground we have.
I want to say, though, that it is an honor to be here with the Thanos of Major League Baseball, really. You just put on the Infinity Catcher's Mitt, put on the six corruption stones, snap your fingers, and half our money disappears, half baseball teams disappear. It's really amazing. It's great to be here with an.
Hold on, I'm checking my stopwatch.
Great to be here.
I had a bet
with an international James Bond villain.
Who had the under 3 minutes? Who had it? I had it. Under 3 minutes before you dive into an area that A, we've discussed before, B, it's getting damn boring, you saying the same thing over and over again. But under 4 minutes,
you know what's getting
winner.
Damn boring? It's paying $3 billion for your ballpark is getting damn boring. That's what's getting damn
boring.
He's
going to keep going.
It's never going to.
Wait a minute. Click. That was a listener leaving. Click. That was another one.
Who clicks? What to click?
Yeah,
it's
a podcast. Like, there are really no clicks.
There's no clicking. They're
clicking,
desubscribing.
They're clicking away? What are they doing?
No, they're leaving you. You have so much talent as a movie maker. I have such respect. I want to understand, what is your goal on Twitter generally? Are you in it to do like let's say Roy? Roy's goal is to attempt to alienate and offend the people that he's trying to bring in his fans.
That's right.
That's his goal. I get it, right? Mike's goal is from a marketing standpoint, get the word out there. What exactly is your goal?
What is my goal?
Other than saying because Miami.
Because Florida, really, is what I say.
Because Florida.
Is really what
Tell me the goal.
So I think that I always wanted to be a journalist when I grew up. It never quite worked out that way. I became a documentarian instead, which is a little bit more of a macro kind of version of journalism.
And you're damn good at it.
More entertainment version of journalism. And thank you. That means very little coming from you.
I know. But I figured. But I actually mean it.
And so I think the Twitter was an extension of sort of my aspirations to do journalism, my aspirations to, I think, really speak truth to power. As a result of the documentaries, I started to gain a little bit of a following on the Twitter machine. And so I felt like, and a lot of people started to reach out to me, particularly locally, when I became vocal about politics, because I discovered that even in a town as small as this one and incestuous as this one, there's so many underserved people. There's so many people without a voice. And I discovered very early that if I just shut up, I could probably be much richer. I could probably be much more well-liked and loved by people in power.
You can be rich and not well-liked.
But that
I wonder who's that? I can't think of it.
Yeah, but enough about your ex-father-in-law. So
was never my father-in-law. Can you get
he's
one
always just
fact
your
straight?
Ex-father-in-law.
No.
Perpetually your
no.
ex-father-in-law.
No.
Wait, I'm always confused by this. What exactly
I'm
going to
set the story for you. Ready? This is a very easy story.
I don't care.
No, I care because no. I always was under the impression you used to be Jeffrey Loria's ex-stepson.
By the way, that's exactly what I am.
Okay.
Do you understand that stepson is different than son-in-law?
Yeah, but I don't care.
No, that's but I'm not asking you if you care. You obviously don't care because facts have never mattered to you.
I know you're not.
Which is weird.
Me.
You're a documentarian.
You're not
and
asking
you don't care
me
about facts.
If I care, but I'm telling you that I don't care.
By the way, it doesn't even stop me a little from telling you the story.
I know.
Do you realize the impact that you have when you say you don't care?
Michael,
it's actually inversely correlated to how badly I want to tell the
Mike
story.
Mike may or may not cut it out, but I'm cutting it out my head.
So you're Jeffrey Loria's ex-stepson. Were you Jeffrey Loria's ex-stepson when you were brought on board the Montreal Expos already?
So he and my mother got divorced in 2004. And actually, it was going on during the World Series. So I had to deal with them not sitting near each other during the World Series.
Oh, man. That's got to be so awkward for you. Another question. Did you call him dad?
No. I have a dad.
Okay.
Who was with
Did
my mom.
Did he have
mom.
A conversation with you? Like, look, I'm not trying to replace your dad. I just love your mother very much.
Obviously, you've never had a stepfather.
I did. But I was like,
you had that conversation with your stepfather?
No, I'm just saying that's one of the cliche conversations. How old were you when Jeffrey became your stepdad?
I was 9.
Thanks for joining us for Jewish Geography.
It's not Jewish at all, nor is it geography.
That's not geography.
We're actually trying to get facts straight that you get wrong. The problem, Billy, that I'm trying to get to you is I think you can be much more impactful if you would tell the truth more and not latch onto an issue where you know you can't win it. And that you're trying to draw attention to something that you can't change, and that bothers me.
I don't think that that's true. I think if you do speak truth to power, you're certainly running the risk that they will shut you up. But I think if you don't speak truth to power, they will most certainly shut you up. Because
How do you shut up someone who's quiet? What does that mean?
Well, because if you don't use your voice,
right,
you are certain to be oppressed. You are certain to be in a situation where you can change nothing.
But do you feel that you've gone too far, though?
No. And I think the need is to cast a spotlight where spotlights deserve to be cast, which are on people predominantly in the public sector, people predominantly who chose public life, who chose public office, who chose to expose themselves and their families to scrutiny and to accountability and to transparency. And people who invariably draw the wrong conclusion, which is that they are somehow the victim. When you go to the public trough, you should be expected not just to gleefully roll around and feed unfettered. You should be expected to be scrutinized and vetted.
Can I just stop you? Gleefully roll around and do something unfettered? It was so many, such an alliteration.
I'm sorry. It's so many words for you. Yeah. I know.
Slower.
I'll speak slower. It's gotta reach you all the way down there.
In the public trough, we may not be on the air, but I would like to point out, how tall are you?
We're the same size. I'm a shillelagh and a half high.
Right. Yeah. So we're the same exact size, actually.
Yes. If you stood on my shoulders and Nevin Shapiro stood on your shoulders, we'd almost be tall as Mike, I think. Almost. We'd almost be as tall as Mike.
And I'm not sure who's more corrupt than the two.
Between Billy and Nevin? That's a tough question, actually.
Oh, that doesn't even make sense.
Yeah, it doesn't. You're right, because to put me in the same category as Nevin Shapiro or you is just shocking to me.
You didn't go to prison.
By the way, do you know why?
Because you studied law?
Because I knew exactly what I was doing. It turns out that the people who go to prison tend to not know what they're doing, shockingly. Unless the premeditated blue collars I'm not talking about. I'm talking about like the Michael Cohns who just went to prison. He reported a few days ago.
How do your parents break the news to you that they're splitting up? Well, your stepdad and your mom.
Well, my parents split up when I was 4.
Yeah.
And they broke the news by my mother telling me that my father was no longer living at home. And then Jeffrey called me into his office the year we won the World Series to tell me that he was leaving my mother, but he would like me to keep working for the team.
Because that was my next question. How awkward is that for you? Because then what do you call yourself, ex-stepson?
I was just the president of his team. We always separated it. We never would, for example, at the Passover table, we would never, that's a Jewish reference, that's a Seder that happens like Easter.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. So yeah, we would never talk. Easter was do you know Good Friday was a Seder?
Yes. Good Friday was the first night of Passover.
Right. Yeah. It's pretty amazing. So really, the Goyim and the Jews have a lot in common, like this. So getting back to your life as a documentarian, and my issue with the documentaries that you do is they are quality good.
Did you say documentaries?
It's an alliteration.
So douchey. Go ahead. Documentary.
At least it's not scumbaggery.
Oh, that's...
Don't you wish we had a camera? I'm going to tweet out a picture of you wearing your scumbaggery shirt, which you wear well with the B cups. It looks
good. The old Florida Marlins logo. The old Marlins script logo in front of the baseball. Scumbaggery.
The last time they were good, right?
Do you know that we were good in 2016? Were you ever at the ballpark?
No, I was never at the ballpark.
We've been to the ballpark.
Nobody's been to the ballpark. What are you talking about?
What do you mean? It's the same 3,000 people who go every day.
It took you losing your job for the mayor of the county to even go to the ballpark, for crying out loud. Nobody's been to the ballpark. It's not funny. It's just true. But that's not true. I visited the bobblehead museum.
Then you've been, that's inside the ballpark.
I know. I've been to the ballpark 2 or 3 times, one of which was for the Guns N' Roses concert.
That was unreal. The story behind the Guns N' Roses concert, these people are nuts, by the way.
Oh,
these
give us
rock
a story.
Stars and what they want, the riders in their contracts. And let me just give an example. A certain color couch is required. X numbers of bottles of water of a certain type have to be in certain places exactly at a point in time of the set. There will be a timeline. The band members come out in a certain order at a certain time. They come in a certain order to the dressing room. There has to be a distance between the dressing room and where they enter the stage. It is mind-boggling.
Whatever it took to get Axl and Slash to play together again, I'm down. I would do. I'd volunteer. I would take the various colored M&Ms out of the dish if that. I'd volunteer for that job if it took, because that show was unbelievable. I saw.
If we didn't have Marlins Park, where would they have played?
Mel Reese.
There you go.
Back nine.
Ladies and gentlemen.
The back nine.
Can you explain, for those listening not in Miami, Mel Reese is a golf course where David Beckham is trying to build a soccer stadium.
Mel Reese
is your next, this is your next project, right? Cause Celeb, you're trying to get soccer, not at Mel Reese.
It's called Bend Over for Beckham.
Bend Over for Beckham.
That's what it's called. Yeah.
That's another movie you wish you would have done.
Yeah,
well, like Beckham.
It's happening right now. No, I don't think.
What do you mean? Then you wouldn't have been in this chair. You would have been real and like famous and rich.
I think, what do people say, especially like, bro, like, this is for people who are not in Miami. I speak fluent West Kendall. Bro, like, are you ever going to do like a real movie, bro? Like, you make documentaries, but like, are you ever going to make a real movie, bro? So I'm like, a real movie. You mean with actors pretending to be other people, with sets that don't really exist, lines that are made up? That sounds like a fake movie to me. I make real movies. I make documentaries. Those are real movies. And the really exciting thing about documentaries is not only do you get to do a little bit of journalism and a little bit of activism, and make films and tell stories, but you can do a movie in any genre as a documentary. Documentaries are not a genre. They're a style of filmmaking, nonfiction films. So you pick a genre of film that you love: sci-fi, romance, sports, action, gangster. You just name a genre that you love, and
you just pick Miami subjects where you can MF anybody who tries to make a difference in this community, moving the community forward. Because
oh
in
God.
Your perfect
move
world,
the community forward.
Yes, in your
so
perfect
three,
world,
so
the cartel.
So that
the cartel was trying to do that.
So that 3,000 people, 80 days out of the year, can watch a baseball game in Little Havana. Are you with a subway downstairs, and which is the only retail that's stuck in that? Are you kidding?
I thought.
Are you kidding?
There's a T-Mobile store.
Ay, Dios mío.
What are you talking about?
Ay, Dios mío.
Could you, by the way, what accent were you using? Assuming
bro,
that
like,
people were listening. What is that?
Bro, West Kendall.
West Kendall.
For those who don't know what West Kendall is, can you tell me what that means?
No. I don't actually know. Yeah, nobody really knows.
It's a populous center of Miami, I guess.
It's a suburb.
Yeah.
It's a suburb, but it's exploded as all things out west have exploded, which is why we need to get rid of the Everglades.
So
and build highways, toll roads, really, is what
is
we
that
need.
Your next one?
Is what my
Save
next
the
one?
Everglades? They're important.
Oh, no. We need toll roads.
Yeah.
No Everglades. Who needs a panther? Who needs
right.
an ecosystem in which gators and crocodiles coexist?
Because
who
Florida.
Needs that?
There was that alligator found in
who
the woman's yoga pants.
Who needs clean water? Do you need clean water? I don't need
I drink
water.
Bottled water from Fiji. Of course I don't need clean water.
Mine come from Zephyr Hills, Florida.
Right.
Yeah. I always stop by. I always get off I-4 and piss in the aquifer every time I pass by there.
I just wish that you would learn, in my opinion, that the key to being impactful and effective is to be credible.
Oh, horseshit. And let me tell you.
By the way, that's
a
real additive to the conversation.
Let me tell you why.
That's a good debate point.
It certainly progresses the conversation. It gets you off this nonsense so you can go back and roll around gleefully in the public trough.
All right? Unfettered.
Unfettered. Unfettered. So first and foremost, I think, we've discovered that on social media anyway, that bullying works. It unquestionably works. Bullying helps you get away with, as it turns out, a non-compliance with congressional subpoenas.
Did you stop?
Oh, wow.
Right time.
Right time. We have a trip with
you know
us.
What that music means?
Ba-da-da-da-da-da-da.
You've been here before in the studio where I invited you off the street and you invited me and you were gracious enough to join. We didn't ever want to hear that music.
Da-da-da-da-da-da.
So, Billy, beneath the table, you'll see a blue magical crate of content. Put that on the table, open it up, and take out one of the questions and forget everything you were talking about before you heard the music. Oh, this is always exciting. Open it up. What does a magic crate of content have for us to push you off of your political leanings?
Here's Billy Corbin going into the magical crate.
Ignore the light and the battery.
And he's got
is that all that's in it?
PFD?
Theater of the mind. You got to always
STD?
Mention the light that's in there. Just grab one of the questions. One of the questions. Here we go.
This is exciting, Billy.
It's a blue card.
Read it into the microphone.
Yeah.
What food do you eat for comfort?
Oh, wow. What a great question. Magic crate, always delivering. Ooh, I like have you had the mega stuffed Oreos?
Oh, yes.
Oh,
yes.
It's triple the amount of regular stuffing.
But you only get comfort depending on how you eat them. Do you separate and then combine? You take two mega stuff, take the inside and then combine them so you've got a triple mega stuff?
I'm not here to judge anybody's Oreo habits. What I like to do, because the Oreo is a very tricky cookie to dunk into milk. You have to be real quick with it, otherwise it'll get too soggy, and you do want the perfect amount of crunch. So you just do a quick dip into the milk, and since a mega stuffed Oreo has so much cream filling, you just take a bite out of it traditionally. I don't have to unscrew it because it's just exploding with cream.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've never eaten an Oreo that way. I've never done a straight-up Oreo.
Oh, how do you do it?
I'm a twist-off.
Okay.
I twist the top and then combine two single stuff into a double stuff. By the way, the best part of this right now is Corbin is despondent. When he came into this studio, he thought he had 60 minutes of the bully pulpit to talk about his political leanings and show the whole world why I'm such a son of a bitch.
The Billy Pulpit. We call it the Billy Pulpit.
I called it that.
Okay. You said the bully pulpit.
Billy, let's get back to what's important. How do you eat an Oreo?
He's gonna walk out. He's gonna walk out.
No, I think it's exciting that this shifted to Oreolingus. This conversation.
I mean, everybody has a specific way.
I like to spread with a twist. You know, you just got a light twist.
Hmm. Oh my God! Can I leave now?
Just spread the chocolate.
Were you caught off guard by Jeffrey's decision?
No, you spread the chocolate cookies.
No, I knew.
You knew it. You saw it coming.
Yeah.
Were there like uncomfortable family gatherings where you're like, ooh, it's a little icy?
I grew up around divorce all the time, so I always go to any time there's a fight that divorce is next.
Aw, I feel bad for you. As a child of divorce, I feel you.
But that's just my default. So I never learned how to actually have a fight because I would always withdraw because I assumed that if I did have a fight, that meant I was getting divorced.
Where were we?
I was talking to Billy about something that I'm going to change slightly the subject because I want to hear about.
I do want to finish answering the question on a totally different track. I had a local politician say to me once, to your point earlier, she said, sometimes we have to be embarrassed into doing the right thing, is what she said. And I find, unfortunately, more often than not, that is true. That's my answer to your last question.
No, I've never been embarrassed.
I believe that. I absolutely believe that.
I have never been embarrassed.
Not at all?
Not one time in my life.
When you traded Jose Reyes.
Jose, by the way, you can name any signing I've ever done from the worst ones to the best ones. And I was never embarrassed by him because I still believe I am getting such a rash of hell for trading Chris Paddock, who is now a top starter for the San Diego Padres, who no one's heard of, except he's pitching like an ace right now for the Padres. And we got back this guy named Fernando Rodney. So Rodney comes here, and he was terrible. We didn't make the playoffs. It's not my fault. It was a good trade. And the Reyes signing you loved when it started. I have a movie question for you because I know you watch more than documentaries.
I do.
And you know that I watch a movie every single day, which is my favorite. I love movies. I've always loved movies. And I have been invited to movie sets, and I have not enjoyed it at all. Even though I spent a day like on the Three Stooges set with the Farrelly brothers, I don't like seeing the hot dog being made. I want to believe that movies are shot in order. I want to believe the characters are real. And I want to believe – I hate movies that end with the end because then that seems fantasy to me. I want movies to end with that it's just the end of that day.
You must love the Marvel movies. They never end.
They
go into the credits. They go after the credits. They go 11 years. You never know what's going to happen.
You're so jealous of the billion-dollar box office.
I love this last movie. I thought – Avengers Endgame, to borrow your pronunciation of like documentaries or Endgame, I thought was incredible. Loved it. I absolutely loved it. I didn't like the previous one, but I absolutely loved it.
Do you have a stuffy list of favorite movies or do you have a normal list? Like, what's your favorite movie of all time?
That's too hard.
You don't have a list?
When you watch movies every day, you can't have like one favorite movie of all time.
Want to bet?
It's just not possible. Jesus Christ.
Let me tell you what I have. In case you're interested, Billy Corbin, because you're a movie maker and I don't get to spend
a lot of time with movie makers. It's also a constantly shifting list because I think as you get older and you revisit different movies, you have different perspectives on them. That's what I'm doing lately. Having turned 40, I'm revisiting some of my favorite movies from that perspective, and it's interesting.
So what I'm showing Billy now is what I carry with me on my phone at all times. It's my list of top 100 movies.
Oh, I thought it was the...
Here it goes. A political joke's coming. Wait for it.
I thought it was the Fifth Amendment is what I thought it was. My attorney has advised me not to answer any of your questions without
a
warrant.
I'm trying here. I'm trying for you.
I know.
Like one time answer something that's not politically slanted. One time just have a conversation.
Slanted to court the Constitution.
One time say it's okay to sit in a room with me and have a conversation about something that's not politics and say it's okay to all your followers to actually say that I may be normal in some way.
It's barely okay to sit in a room with you, but read your list.
I find you sad. You make me sad. I'm trying. You purposefully call me Dave. Purposefully.
I have not called you Dave once since I've been here, Dave. I haven't. So not once.
Wait, funny. Is that a Google Doc? Are you always changing that? Or is it a notepad? What is that?
Is that a Google Doc? What is that?
I don't know what a Google Doc means.
Oh, okay, so but how often are you changing that? Do you
whenever I see a movie. So this is my list of top 100 movies. Then, elsewhere on my phone, I have the list of every movie I've seen since I updated the list. So I go through the list of movies, and when I want to work one into my top 100, I take away number 100.
What's number 72?
I love where your head's at, right? Why ask me a normal question? So I'm going to tell you what my number 72 is. It's actually a great – oh, my God. It's one of my favorite movies, Finding Neverland.
Wow. Oh, the Johnny Depp
with Johnny Depp and Kate Winslet.
Oh, I thought it was.
So you have a list of your top 100 movies that evolves, ever evolving, and you also have an ongoing list of every movie that you've ever seen, starting when?
Not since I've done the last list,
which is
so
like roughly.
I like where your head's at. Oh. The last time this is from August 21st of 16.
Jesus, you guys remember what it was like to not have a job, right?
I had it, by the
really
way.
You're taking me back.
Wait, on August 21st of 16, I had a very big job, which was trying to get as much money as I could from both public and private sectors. And I say I did a hell of a great job, which is why I've got time to keep adding to the list.
I was only following orders.
Don't bring German into this. You know I'm Jewish, and why would you do that? Why would you make me sound German?
That's your argument. Yeah, it's the classic I was only following orders argument. Which doesn't absolve you morally or ethically of
your sins. I think that comparing the public-private partnership and selling the team for 1.2 to Jeter is just like killing 6 million Jews.
Public-private.
I think you're right,
public,
actually.
Public-private partner. I said the defense was. I wasn't making any other comparison.
No, I think you've done it right.
I wasn't making any other.
Okay, I'm getting back to my list.
No, I
got to go to the crate. I'm going to the crate.
I think it's your crate.
Careful. There's a light in there. Careful.
Orban really makes me crazy. Here I go.
There's some sort of sex toy.
My question from the mystery crate, which I love. By the way, if this doesn't tell you everything about Billy Corbin, my question is, what foods you eat for comfort? When you take a question out of the crate, you don't put it back.
You can't put it back.
What difference does it make? What questions?
Because then I get the same question.
He's just going to edit it anyway. What difference does it make?
Billy,
and if you give a better answer this time, he's going to totally cut my Oreo Lingus line anyway. So if I'll have a chance to do it again, maybe he'll like the second take better.
Which animals scare you the most? That is very easy. The hippopotamus.
It's a great answer, David.
It's hippopotami scare me.
Yeah. Have you ever seen?
Have you ever seen a hippopotamus that didn't scare you?
Never. Yeah, at the zoo. Well, Fantasia. They wore tutus.
Do you know what a sneech is? Yeah, right,
yeah. No.
I've been dying to ask you this, Corbin. Anybody?
No.
A sneech.
Yeah.
S-N-E-E-C-H?
S-N-E-E-T-C-H.
T-C-H.
The sneeches. So you're a learned man in your own small sector. Have you ever heard of Dr. Seuss?
Yes, of course.
Okay. He wrote a book called Sneeches and Other Stories. Still nothing? One in this room has heard of the sneeches.
No, I think I know what the sneeches are.
I haven't seen
that
book yet.
Yeah.
You haven't seen? Roy, get on that.
Okay. I got a daughter, so I got
to. Absolutely.
You should be reading Dr. Seuss. It's just as much for adults as it is for kids. Anyway.
I've read Sneeches Get Steeches. Is that the same part of the same series?
No.
Okay.
So I'm going to tell you very quickly what the sneeches are, and I want to show you that it matters. It's about sneeches that have stars on their belly and some sneeches who don't. And the sneeches with stars always had the best life. They had the most money. They got everything.
Yellow stars?
They were the bane of your existence. Then there were sneeches without stars who had nothing, who got made fun of every day. Then a man came in and said, I have an idea. I'm going to put stars on you, on the sneeches without stars. Then everyone in the world had stars on their bellies. So guess what the Sneetches with Stars did? They took the stars off their bellies. Now the Sneetches without the stars were the ones who had the money and the power. So then the Sneetches with the stars went back into the machine to get the stars taken off their bellies. And do you know what happened? The only one who made money was the man with the machine who kept putting stars on and off the bellies of the Sneetches until they decided it didn't make one goddamn bit of difference whether you had a star or didn't.
This is the most hostile Dr. Seuss story I've ever heard in my life.
The point is, Corbin, that you spend your life.
Dr. Seuss has ever pounded a table before.
You spend your life looking for Sneetches without stars because you believe that those with stars, by definition, were born into privilege, do everything to screw over the public. And I'm telling you, I like movies like you do, and I like our community. I love Miami, and I'm sick and tired, as are millions of other people in Miami, who spend all day listening to your diatribe about how evil the world is.
First of all, I don't think that...
I'm going to the crate.
I don't think that extended metaphor actually carries.
I mean, he said he's going to the crate, so he's got to pull another one. I'm sorry. No chance for a rebuttal. Also, very sharks. Angry. Sharks are terrifying.
Da, 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 da.
This one's for you, Billy. Which movies have you watched over and over?
Which
Just
Billy?
Just name the number one movie that you will watch.
Guillermo, is that the Billy he was referring to?
Skyscraper.
No, you haven't.
Skyscraper, Billy? Other Billy, have you seen Skyscraper?
You haven't. First of all, you don't watch Skyscraper.
I see every movie with The Rock.
It's so awesome.
I see every
David,
movie
you need
Rock.
To see Skyscraper.
I've never seen it more than once, though. I've never seen
His tattoo's too big.
I've never seen it more than once.
What does that mean? What size should his tattoo be?
Smaller.
But he's huge.
Distracting.
How's it distracting?
I stare at his shoulder instead of listening to the dialogue.
He puts duct tape all over his hands, and he says, you know what the only problem is? If you don't have enough duct tape, use more duct tape. How can you get distracted by his tattoo when he's swinging on a rope, walking on the side of a building with duct tape? That's how he's sticking onto this building.
Yeah, David, he has 1 foot in the movie.
Yeah.
1 foot.
Yeah.
He's saving the skyscraper while having 1 foot.
Yeah. It's been on Delta for like the last 6 months, and I still won't watch it.
I mean, how are you
even,
gonna watch
even with a six-hour delay?
You haven't updated your top 100 since 2016, which is very sad because clearly...
Yeah. No, his top 100 is updated regularly.
No, but there hasn't been a movie worth being put on the top 100 since 2016.
No, let me clarify. I keep the list since 16 of the movies I've seen, right. And I choose to decide when I see a movie whether I'm going to stick it into the top 100 or
okay,
not.
Okay, so what's the most recent?
Skyscraper will not no. make
Oh,
the
you,
cut.
Need to watch
you need to watch it.
It yeah. No. Do you have like a recycle bin that the movies that fall out of the top 100 go into and
no,
could they
but
make
it's
their
sad.
Way back in?
Honorable mention?
Yeah, Boneyard. Has a movie ever made its way back in?
No. That, by the way, that's an absolute rule unwritten that cannot be broken.
That doesn't even make sense.
If it falls out of your top 100, it can never go back in.
That doesn't even make sense.
I do not.
If something can fall out, how can another one not reascend to the top 100?
Because it only falls out because you've seen something new.
Or the times can change. Like 40-Year-Old Virgin for a very long time was my favorite R-rated comedy. And then I watched it last year. I'm like, this doesn't actually hold up as well as I thought.
Is Deadpool an R-rated comedy?
Yeah,
yes.
Technically,
of course that's a comedy.
What's the highest of movies moved into your list? Like you see a movie for the first time and all of a sudden it's like, oh man, this is number 52.
I'm going to tell you the most recent movie that I saw that I loved was American Hustle, moved in right at number 11.
Wow.
Yes,
unprecedented.
American Hustle, the Dave Sampson story. It's my favorite Lifetime movie.
It's actually David Russell. But that's okay. That again,
David
that's
O.
a director who
David
makes,
O. Russell.
That's a guy who makes money, so
makes,
we wouldn't want to
makes great movies.
Ourselves.
Great,
he does make great movies. By
fake now. Movies.
Ever since Flirting with Disaster, fake movies. Actually, American Hustle isn't. American Hustle's based.
Are you
on
being
a true
sarcastic
story.
Or not? Ben Stiller, Tia Leone.
I love Flirting with Disaster. That's probably the first.
We just
David
said the same thing at the same
that's
time.
That's probably
what number? Jinx. What number is it?
It's not in my top 100.
What?
No, no, no. But I love that movie.
You
not
know what?
Top 100.
We have to any time that there's common ground, we have to celebrate it. Okay, you guys both have a shared love for Tia Leone.
I actually,
Bad
I
Boys.
Love her.
Bad Boys. She was wonderful in Bad Boys.
Did you ever
a
see
a great Miami movie?
Family yeah. Man with Nicolas Cage.
I did.
And?
I mean, as far as the retreads of It's a Wonderful Life go, I guess it's certainly one of the better
ones.
Put
it above Mr. Destiny with Jim
yes,
Belushi?
Yes, I would put it above
because
Mr. Destiny.
I love Mr. Destiny. It's not my top 100, but Michael Caine is the bartender in Mr. Destiny yes. and Rene Russo as the wife. And the Terminator's wife,
it's
Linda
great,
Hamilton.
It's a great cast, but I would definitely, I'd rank Family Man above Mr. Destiny in the It's a Wonderful Life retreads.
I loved it. I absolutely loved it.
What's 100 right now? Like, what's the next one out?
Who's sliding out?
Yeah. The Secret Life of Walter Mitty.
Really?
Wow.
is the next.
With Ben Stiller?
Is the next to go.
Wow, but you really like Stiller.
And I actually do love Ben Stiller, but the thing
He's always in the plight of the Jewish white man stories. That's why. Life is so hard for a Jewish white man in America. You know, he's really an empathetic hero.
It's amazing, right? He's acting like he's been oppressed, right, his entire life.
I'm not. I'm certainly not. How have I was born a white man in America. I won the genetic lottery, for crying out loud. I'm very well aware of it, you know.
And you feel so guilty, which is why you do what you do. Walter Mitty came in
guilty?
Yes. That's enough politics.
White guilt?
That's
is
enough.
Is that what you're, white
you're
guilt?
Fired. 90.
White guilt?
That's it, Billy.
White guilt? No.
Billy,
no. By
you
the way,
can only take your Levitar relationship so far. He's
fired.
Not in the studio.
Dude, you're
just
fired.
So you know.
You're fired.
He doesn't care.
Words.
Mike doesn't care. This is his show.
Words I've never heard and words you're very familiar
People
with. You're
show.
Fired.
Okay. It came in at 90. And the next one to go off the list after that makes me sad. Oh. It's Stripes and Dumb and Dumber.
Oh,
which
Stripes.
Are two of my favorites. Yeah. And those are going to be off the list.
Dave's the kind of guy who watches Reality Bites and roots for Ben Stiller. Like thinks that Winona Ryder should have wound up with her instead of Ethan Hawke. Of course she ended
course
up
she
with
did.
Ethan Hawke. They looked the best kissing.
Yeah.
Though they did. That's why that worked.
I'm actually romantic and my favorite trilogy is not in the Avengers category, even though that's not a trilogy.
Before Sunrise? The Before Sunrise?
Yes, that's my trilogy. Before Sunrise, Before Sunset, Before Sunrise, and then Before Midnight was the third.
Yeah. I think Rick Linklater is crazy brilliant. Especially when dealing with actually the issue I was talking about before, which is like sort of rewatching movies at different ages. He makes movies at different ages. And kind of, you know, explores that Boyhood
he
is a good example.
The Academy Award winner Patricia Arquette in Boyhood. Do you guys know about Boyhood? You better back there if you're a movie person.
I mean, it's another Ethan Hawke vehicle.
It is an Ethan Hawke vehicle. Arquette won the Oscar for that. By the way, she was in True Romance, which is one of my top 20 movies of all time.
I saw
that script.
I saw that last month and it made me uncomfortable.
You saw True Romance?
You had never seen it?
No, I had never seen it. I'd seen parts of it when I was younger and I saw it on a plane back from England and I was like, whoa, this is a really rough watch in 2019.
I watched it again last year just to revisit it and it holds up. Oh, it holds. I think
Gary Oldman, that performance.
Well, he's one of the best actors of our generation. We don't talk about him enough. But you look at him, and especially in Darkest Hour, which he just became Winston Churchill. But he's been doing great roles for his whole career.
But that whole movie, Dennis Hopper in that movie, with that monologue in the trailer with Chris Walken.
That scene is very uncomfortable.
Crazy.
See, 2019, watch movies through a 2019 prism. It's difficult sometimes.
Are you saying because it's not politically correct that you are bothered?
Well, Tarantino films are always going to have that problem. They're always going to make you feel uncomfortable.
I feel like they make you feel uncomfortable in the best way, though. Yeah. Like, not in a just flat-out uncomfortable way.
And Tarantino didn't direct this movie. I forget who
Tony wrote it. Tony Scott.
Yeah, Tony Scott did. But Tarantino wrote it.
He did. Yeah, I think it was brilliantly directed. I think that's part of the reason why it holds up is that Tony Scott. I think the musical choices, that Zimmer score.
Are Ridley Scott and Tony Scott brothers?
Yes.
Yeah.
Is that the most successful brother directing team other than the Farrelly brothers?
Well, Tony Scott's dead now, but
yes.
I have to think. I think for brothers
is
who had
cancer.
No, he committed suicide.
Yeah.
Okay, that's not great.
No, not great.
I think we should go into the box.
No, let's stay
depressing.
Here. Coen brothers?
But I think the point is that maybe the most successful filmmaking brothers who didn't work together as a team, meaning they had their own,
they had
separate careers, because, you know, you have the,
who are they competing
with?
The
Hughes brothers, the Coen brothers, you have a lot of the Russo brothers,
Stallone brothers.
I'm sorry, I think the Russo brothers are box office wise probably now the most successful, but they're a filmmaking team, I mean, as opposed to director, brothers who had their own separate careers.
So when I was on set with the Farrelly brothers for Three Stooges, they did it in a way that they were both together on each scene, but they told me the story about other co-directing brothers, like let's say the Coen brothers, who actually take turns. So I found that interesting.
Yeah. And the Wachowskis, I think, have a similar style too, where they kind of, they silo the responsibilities a little bit. They each deal with different facets of the set. Which I think is kind of important because I can't even imagine what it's like having directors in stereo. I think it's hard enough to be a director. It's hard enough to take direction, but to have like
two people
in either ear would be a little bit.
So Peter Farrelly of Green Book, the Academy Award winning, he yelled at me my take in Three Stooges. I was in the movie. I had a non-speaking role and I had to do it 20 times because he didn't like the face I was making.
You were on that set longer than you were on Survivor.
No, shorter. It all got done in a day, but thank you for bringing that up. That joke will never get old. Are you almost done with your Red Bull? Because we got another one for you.
Almost, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
It's in that.
Have you hit your target heart rate of the day?
It's
of
in
a hundo?
The blue box with the sex toy or whatever the hell's in there.
It's called it's a light switch. By the way.
Why is
that
there
just
a light in there?
It's supposed to glow. It's a magic crate, so.
Oh, it's a very Tarantino-esque kind of a, kind of a glowing. Yeah,
what's in the briefcase?
Yes, let's go there.
What's in the briefcase? I've asked people who are part of the movie. No. What's in the briefcase in Pulp Fiction?
Nothing. It's a MacGuffin. There's nothing in the
briefcase. What's a MacGuffin?
A MacGuffin is to force us all to sit around and talk about what's in the briefcase. A MacGuffin is the story device that pushes – it's the device that pushes the story forward. Hitchcock coined the term.
That's a great term.
The MacGuffin. It's just – you know what a MacGuffin is?
That.
Let me use a modern term so people listening will understand. The allspark in Transformers.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean anything. It does whatever the screenwriters needed to do on this page
or
that page.
The allspark brings the machines to life.
It doesn't – no, but then – remember that whole movie, The Transformers, Optimus Prime is like, if all else fails, I'll have to blow myself up with the allspark. And Sam's like, no, don't do it. He's like, no, Sam, I'm going to have to save the universe. And then at the end, Sam picks up the allspark and uses it as a gun to blast away the Decepticons. And Optimus Prime's kind of like, or you could do that with it, I guess. You know, what was he going to say?
It was
like,
the dialogue, actually.
It was like,
you don't
it didn't
think
make
the Band-Aid on the back of Ving Rhames' head was a sign of the devil?
No.
Am I the only one who thought that?
I mean, the most popular fan theory is that it's Marcellus Wallace's soul that's in the briefcase.
Right, that is a popular theory, but I don't think that really moves the story forward any more so than us sitting around debating what it is.
Right.
So there's a movie called What's Up, Tiger Lily? It's a Woody Allen movie, but not really a Woody Allen movie. This was when he was at his peak as a stand-up and a comedy writer, off Sid Caesar's Show of Shows and doing his stand-up albums around, the village. And he was hired by some dude who got, a catalog of crappy old, black and white Japanese spy movies. And he didn't know what the hell to do with them, how to monetize them. So he hired Woody Allen to watch the movie and write a script for voiceover actors. He said, I don't care what you write. Just voice over this Japanese spy, James Bond knockoff spy movie.
Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Right. But they're voicing, Woody Allen does a voice and he hired all these actors and he wrote a script. And so it's a classic, cheesy spy movie where there's a microfilm and he's got to seduce a woman and she's a double agent. It's all about the microfilm. Yeah. The microfilm is a MacGuffin.
Like a Spy Hard starring Leslie Nielsen.
Leslie Nielsen. Good reference. Florida man. I think he's buried in Fort Lauderdale. We should go visit. Let me pour a little Red Bull out. Woody Allen did was he said that the microfilm contained that everybody was killing each other over and seducing each other over and betraying countries over contained the secret recipe for egg salad. And what that
That's
did was
a Jewish reference.
Well, but it cast a spotlight on the fact that it doesn't matter. The MacGuffin doesn't matter. The MacGuffin is just the device that moves the story forward that everybody's fighting over, but it ultimately is irrelevant what it is. And that's the briefcase in Pulp Fiction.
The end of Lost in Translation when Bill Murray whispers into Scarlett Johansson's ear, that's not a MacGuffin
because
it does matter what he said.
It does
Did he
matter.
Say, I'm flying home, but you're going to come meet me? I'm leaving my wife. We're going to be
but
together.
But that's not a MacGuffin.
So that's clearly
that
to you
drive,
not a MacGuffin.
The MacGuffin drives the story forward. That happens at the end of the story,
right.
At the very end of the story.
So for me, the briefcase, just to put a pin in this one, the reason it's not the soul, and I've read that they think it's the soul, is that Tim, oh my God, what's the name of the
Roth?
Actor? Tim Roth.
Yeah.
Great actor. Tim Roth looks at it in the diner and says, is that what I think it is? How would he recognize Marcellus Wallace's soul?
He wouldn't. That's what I'm saying.
So
it's
then
not
it can't
Marcellus
be. But then it can't be the soul.
I mean, you have to suspend disbelief because this is, if it is indeed the soul, this exists in a universe in which people know what souls look like because this could actually be something that's in a suitcase.
I don't want to suspend belief. I want it to be something.
The theory that I enjoy a little bit more is the sort of like the Tarantino extended universe theory, which is not also similar to the Pixar extended universe theory.
You're talking about how they're Vega brothers?
Right. All of the movies take place in the same universe with some overlapping characters, certainly overlapping chronologies and timelines, and that they're all sort of – so you can really look to all of his movies in a way to find an answer for what is in the briefcase. I ultimately believe there is no answer to what's in the briefcase, much like there probably isn't an answer to what Bill Murray whispers to Scarlett Johansson at the end of
Lost in Translation. He definitely whispered something.
He would know he
and
whispered
neither,
something.
They won't tell us. Scarlett Johansson and Bill Murray will not say.
But was
and
it
neither
scripted?
Will Sofia Coppola.
But was it scripted?
I don't know.
But see, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying it doesn't matter. There was an artist who was once asked back in the days of the CD, why don't you publish your lyrics in the liner notes of your CD. And he said, well, once I sing a song and perform it, it belongs to the world. So whatever you hear.
Is that Freddie Mercury?
It's not. It's
what, he said that in Bohemian Rhapsody.
Oh, did he? Whatever you hear and whatever it means to you, it doesn't matter what I wrote.
The song Bohemian Rhapsody.
What you hear. But I kind of understand all those words pretty well. They just don't make any sense. That's the charm
to him. It was nothing.
That song,
right? By the way, Pulp Fiction is Magic Johnson on my list. It's Magic Johnson.
Wow, 32?
FYI.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow. That's
really?
Yeah,
yes.
That's a good one.
It's a good, that is a good one. That's solid. Pulp Fiction's a masterpiece.
Isn't the, do you think they meant to do it? Because I believe the character's name is Brad, that Samuel L. Jackson has that incredible scene with where
Brad.
He's sipping from the sippy cup, but he's like, oh, check out the big brain on Brett. And he says his name wrong. Do you think he meant to do that or that was just a mistake?
I think he didn't know the guy's name. So I think it's purposeful.
Yeah.
They had the money to re-edit it. So, you know that I was on the air this morning doing a piece on Paddock and on Rodney, and I called him Francisco, and the anchor said, do you mean Fernando? I said, no, I meant Francisco. And then it got edited out because apparently I had the name completely wrong, which, by the way, the one thing about Rodney, I'll tell you, he was a really good guy, and he was so apologetic. He was the best reliever in 2016 in all of baseball. He didn't give up a hit in San Diego, and when we got him, we were a good team, and he couldn't get an out with us. And he would apologize, which I've only had a handful of players apologize for bad performance. One of them was Al Leiter, and I didn't accept his apology in 2005 because he was so destructively bad on that team that should have been good.
Would he apologize because he felt bad, or would he apologize because he was just like polite? It was like a he was just like a
he apologized because he got $8 million to basically ruin a team and not be good.
What, like clubhouse wise?
He was brought in to be.
How much did you get to ruin a team?
I never went on the field, actually. Can't resist that, Red Bull boy. So
Jeter, Christ.
I didn't choose Jeter. Jeter chose me. Can we be clear about that?
You didn't
that?
Land on Plymouth Rock, huh?
Jeter chose Denbo, and Jeter chose me. That's it.
That's it.
Now,
that's
Jeter, it. Now Sherman didn't even choose Jeter. There's a little nugget that we can talk about
Wait,
another time.
Well, another time.
Let's talk about another time.
Hang on.
You got time here.
I was always under the assumption that Jeter was just like, hey, guys, I'm going to get this done because
like
I'm Derek
together.
Jeter. Yeah. I'm Derek Jeter, so you have to bring me aboard your team because I'm the one with the relationship. I'm going to be the smiling face.
Quite the opposite.
No.
Quite the opposite.
Okay, please describe.
But it's not part of this show.
No, it is.
But it's
it
an
is.
Entire
It is now.
This
yeah.
is no.
He's gonna open with
not
it.
A mystery.
No, it's a mystery crate.
But here's the mystery solved about how that happened. Derek Jeter wanted to be the controlling owner, not the CEO. He wanted to be the actual head guy.
With what money?
But yeah, he wasn't putting up any money.
I love where your head's at. So he told me that he was putting a bunch of money in and that he was going to be the head guy. And I had to sit in a meeting with him and the commissioner of baseball. And I had to tell Jeter that you will not get approved. I can't get 23 votes for you to be the control person of this team. So you are not getting this team. And
you told that to that biracial angel?
Because he did. Because you told him in plain terms, you don't have the money.
I said you are not putting the money in, and I don't have the votes to get you approved. And my job is to get a deal approved. And if it's going to be A-Rod, if it's going to be Moss, if it's going to be Governor Bush,
A-Rod.
Whoever
you,
it is,
you knew what you were doing with A-Rod.
By the way, I dropped A-Rod's name more than DuPont drops Teflon when I would speak to Jeter.
Wow.
Oh, please. It's like taking money from a baby, right? I mean.
Oh, I think it's candy from a
candy,
baby.
Yeah, it's candy.
Oh, sorry.
Don't have money, you're just so used to taking
it's a,
money.
It's a Freudian slip.
That's a mixed metaphor. I don't think Freud's involved, although I am in therapy currently.
How many billions of dollars have you taken from babies? Tell me.
I'm in therapy because of you, Bill.
Wow. I want to tell you
honestly,
that your name comes up.
That's the first thing you've ever said to me that I've been flattered by.
Oh, because you want me to go crazy. Do you really want that?
I don't
do
want
you
to go
really
crazy. I think you are crazy.
That
I don't.
Do you really? Because I like you, Billy. I really like you.
That's very sweet.
You know what?
Oh, really?
I actually believe him.
That's why he picked me up at the pool.
I think there's something here. I don't know if it's exactly opposites attract, but maybe you guys are a little bit more similar than me to you.
By the way,
why don't you guys hug?
What's scary to him is that we are way more similar than he knows. And that drives him crazy because he doesn't understand that I'm playing a part. That's all I'm doing.
I guess he's so qualified to shrink my head since he's the one in therapy here.
Wait a minute.
Let's not stigmatize that, Billy.
Are you stigmatizing therapy? Do it.
I want you
to do it right now.
I'm not stigmatizing
don't
therapy.
Don't walk out there.
I'm not stigmatizing therapy.
You shouldn't.
I'm not.
Because you could use it.
Whoa.
Not going to lie.
A lot of people could.
by the way. First of all, if you are in this studio right now and not in therapy, then you've got a problem.
Yep. That's a good point.
Yeah, right? Shit, I've been there.
You should be there.
Dude, this is a tight quarter. You should not be working, even with like people that you absolutely adore, you shouldn't be working in these tight quarters.
Hours
for
and
so
hours
long.
A day.
Yeah, it's like working in a tank. Yeah, no, it's true.
With people watching and listening and critiquing what you do.
That's
wait a minute, who else had a job like that? Who else had a job where the public can critique what you do without?
Oh shit! I left my violin in the car.
Do you realize that people critiquing can actually do the job?
It's an electric cello, but I'm going to run downstairs and grab it.
How many people think they can do what you guys do?
Oh yeah, so many.
Everybody.
Yeah.
Every one of the Stugatz army believes they could be Stugatz. In that case, they're 100% right. So I'm not talking about that.
Yeah, they're right. That's one instance.
I'm talking about the rest of us who are doing a job. Even you, Corbin. People don't know what it is to make a movie. I know.
No, it's a huge pain in the ass.
It is a huge pain in the ass.
And you're right. Being
especially without subsidies.
Being on set. Being on set.
He got you there.
You're throwing stones down from your glass house. Made it political.
Should we talk about that?
No. Hey, we're out of time. Thanks, everyone. It's been fun.
We hope you enjoyed that, pilot episode of what I hope personally is more to come from Billy Corbin and David Samson along with us here in the shipping container.
Billy Corbin's voice sounds like he's really smart. I'm not saying he isn't. I'm just saying his voice, the way he presents it, the way he speaks, he gives off smart.
They both do. They're both brilliant.
Yeah.
David Samson was a lawyer.
Wow.
So you got to be smart to do that.
Who do you think's more brilliant, Chris?
Wow.
Well, based off what I said, probably would lean Corbin, but I feel like Daniel's a little more relatable. And Corbin kind of is on a high horse. I know Samson not really relatable, but he likes
not a lot of people relate to Samson, but right. A lot of people can relate with what Samson had to go through when he was removed as Marlins team president and paid a nice little severance, we might add, when he was looking for work. Guys, we know looking for work is a lot of work.
Yeah.
Don't we?
Yeah.
Do we?
Yeah.
We can assume
so. Yeah.
What if you had your own personal recruiter to help you find a better job? Now, ZipRecruiter's technology can do that for you. Just download the ZipRecruiter job search app, let it know what kind of jobs you're interested in, and its technology starts doing the work for you. The ZipRecruiter app finds the jobs you'll like and puts your profile in front of employers who may be looking for someone just like you. And if an employer likes your profile, ZipRecruiter lets you know. So if you're interested in that job, you can apply right away. No wonder ZipRecruiter is a number one job search rated app. And right now, we urge you to download the free ZipRecruiter job search app today and let the power of technology work for you. Don't wait. The sooner you download the free ZipRecruiter job search app, the sooner it can help you find a better job. So guys, do we want to see David Samson and Billy Corbin back in here? Are we afraid they might rip their heads off? Did we get along fine with them? Did we enjoy the experience together? Or should we just bury it?
I think we should do it every week.
Yeah.
No more Mystery Crate, just Billy Corbin and David Samson.
Well, what would they be doing?
Yeah, I probably came a little strong there.
Talking, probably.
Yeah, because we have other segments like You Never Know.
No, yeah.
You Never Know. Roy's cooking show that's debuting next week. Is that...
It's in the cards.
Rooking.
It's in the
card. That's good, man.
It's not. It really isn't. We don't need to keep doing that.
It's a thing.
So if you enjoy what you're listening to here, let us know. Give us your feedback on our various social media handles and subscribe, rate, review on the Mystery Crate on your desired platform. Hopefully it's Apple Podcasts because their metric system's funny to play with and it makes for a good screen cap. So go ahead and do that. We appreciate it and we'll talk to you next week.